warrior's mindset is about conditioning the mind, body, and spirit. It takes practice, commitment, vision, goal setting, determination, sharp focus, respect, and discipline. Once you learn it, you can apply it to all aspects of your life. The warrior's mindset prepares you for the largest competition ever, the competition against self.
This program is sponsored by the American Martial Arts Alliance Foundation and Elite Publications. Everyone has a story. You just have to get it out. Visit Elite Publications at www.elitepublications.org.
Okay, everyone. All right. So we have Master Bruce Fontaine. Did I say the last name correctly, sir?
Yes, sir, you did. Thank you.
Oh, good. Awesome, man. Let me pat myself on the back. Give the audience a brief introduction on yourself, sir.
Okay. I'm a bit older, so it's a long story, but I'll try to keep it brief. I guess you could say I'm a byproduct of the Bruce Lee Kung Fu TV series time. Back in the early 70s, I was exposed to all of that and took an interest in martial arts. As fate would have it, a couple of kids up the street ran a grocery store, Chinese Canadian boys, Wally and Richard. They introduced me to a very traditional Kung Fu school in Vancouver's Chinatown. We did a type of martial art called Shuai Lei Fat. I was probably one of the only non-Asians in the school at the time. We're talking kind of, you know, mid-70s. It was very different back then. It was on just the edge of Vancouver's Chinatown. I was very much, it was part of my life, okay? It was part of my personal definition, if you will. Later, as I got in my late teens, Wushu, competition Wushu, was becoming known. And there was a fella in Vancouver named Tom Ferris. He was a classmate. Some of you might remember Keith Hirabayashi. Some know him as Keith Cook. He was based out of Seattle. He was learning from a guy named Roger Tong. Anyways, this fella named Tom used to go to Seattle, come back to Vancouver, and taught some people. I was one of his students. Shortly after, that school kind of dissipated, or group rather. And then a gentleman from China is one of the early wave of Wushu people coming from China, Shouyu Liang. He made it into a lot of the magazines back in the day, frequently show up at some of the martial art events like Jeff Bolts and so on. So I did Wushu with Shouyu Liang. I always say that a lot has had to do with my fate. I had a strong interest in Hong Kong movies, particularly Jackie Chan, Sammo Hung, these sorts of people. Anyways, the Wushu team went to China for what was called the second international championships in 1986 in Tianjin, China. I qualified for the Canadian team. We're talking very early Wushu development. Went to China, stopped in Hong Kong, and at that time, I'm sure you know who Cynthia Rothrock is. She had just done a movie which was very popular in Hong Kong called Yes, Madam, and was doing, I think, another film or two. I think maybe Shanghai Express. Anyways, after that, I was in Hong Kong. I did a variety TV show performing Wushu. People said, oh, you should come here and do movies. And literally, a lot of little weird comic things happening, but 2 years later, at age 25, I just decided that's it. I'm going to move to China and Hong Kong. And in 1988, I returned, settled down in Hong Kong, spent 8 years of my life there. Half of that was in film industry tanked. And then I basically, after 4 years of doing other things in China, decided to come back to Canada, dabbled in film. But also taught Wushu for a number of years. And in more recent phase of my life, I'm now, I guess you could say, an independent filmmaker. And I had released a film just before, 2016 it was released, 2017, sorry. It's called Beyond Redemption. For an independent film, it did quite well. And since then, my focus has been on trying to get that next film project going. But as fate would have it, COVID provided a wrinkle, and you know, I'm not complaining. A lot of people worse off, but now I'm just a dedicated filmmaker.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, that lineage of Roger Tong and Keith Tarashi, I got a chance to train with them. I call Cindy one of my mentors. We went and I got a chance to travel to China and train in like 84 with Master Brown, because that's one of my teachers, Grandmaster Dennis Brown. Yeah. So, the early days were wonderful days, man. It was the great beginning of Wushu at that moment. And I really did follow your career.
That's vice versa. Well, I know you're doing everything. I remember I see you in the magazines. And I don't know if you remember Bill Chung and Alice Chang.
Yes. I compete with them too. Yes.
Yeah. We were kind of in the same group at one point under that fella, Tom. So I knew them very well. And then they went on to do their own thing. And I'd see you show up in the magazines. And then, of course, back then, everything was VHS. So once in a while, I get something like, you know, the circuit stuff or the NASCAR stuff from William and Alice. And I'd see yours truly there. You know, along with all the other prevalent people, the Time Wholesome Pack and all these people.
You know, the WMAC Masters, all that stuff. But I followed you. I've seen all the great things you did. Ken, there was a couple of guys that went to China with us that ended up going to Hong Kong and doing some films too.
There was Jeff Ball.
Remember him.
Ken Goodman
was without Tim. That's who.
Yeah, he was one of the early ones going to China. There was a Robin Show who kind of we were kind of in a different level because he's doing more the Hong Kong acting side. We're more or less the non guys. But Ken Goodman, Jeff Falcon, that came from the Wushu scene anyways. There was one fella, he wasn't as well known, but he went to China. He was based in New York, named Dan Mintz. Yeah, Dan's done incredibly well. He's a mega wealthy guy. He stayed in China and had his own production company, which did exceedingly well. So quite a few guys from actually that time that did end up in Hong Kong. In fact, in a funny way, I stayed in Beijing to train, and Ken Goodman, Dan, Jeff Falcon were all there. 2 years later, we all arrived in Hong Kong literally within weeks of each other. And I bumped into Ken Goodman one day in front of a theater. And then another day, I bumped into Jeff Falcon and hung out with, I don't know if you remember Anthony Chan.
Yep, I remember Anthony Chan, the man that grew it all over here.
And George Chung, if you know who George Chung is, West Coast demo team. Ernie Ray, the Rothrock, and hung out one night with Jeff, Anthony Chan, and George Chung, just drinking, getting drunk, just chilling. Dan Mintz, I was on my way to a meeting with a film company, and he happened to get on the same elevator at the same time, and we're like, 2 years ago, Beijing, and here we are. So, okay.
What I wanted to say, when we look at, you know, because I work with a lot of the guys in the New York area, a lot of the guys, and I got a lot of kids that are now working on the Marvel films, the action films, doing all the crazy stuff. We know that tricking and all that stuff is just a borrow of Wushu, you know, because at that time it was kind of hard for the karate not putting it down to keep up with Wushu and everything. So now is just an extension of what Wushu was doing back then. I mean, would you agree, sir?
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, Wushu was performed, and it had the acrobatics, and you could see the slow evolution, especially with the West Coast demo team, Ernie Reyes. They started incorporating, if not elements of Wushu, acrobatics to compete with the Wushu. And things like the landing on your kicking leg, which you didn't see typically in martial arts, you started seeing surfacing with the Taekwondo types like George Chung and what have you. The Wushu was the granddaddy of tricking.
You know, it's always have that vision of every Marvel movie where you see them do the pose, the tap, 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 that pose that we do in Wushu, every Marvel movie. I'm like, oh man, that's a Wushu move, man. That was our power move when we competed. But now you just did over and over and over. They got to give us the credit, man. They don't get a Wushu the credit. I mean, take that, sir.
Well, I would agree, and I think my personal feeling, because I returned to Canada in 96, and Jackie Chan had done Rumble in the Bronx, and he was starting to make inroads. But when The Matrix and Crouching Tiger came out, I think that was when you saw a really big shift. And if you look at a lot of the people that were, say, in charge of stunts at that time, not all of them were really able to differentiate between Wushu and tricking or Taekwondo. Mm-hmm. It was just flashy martial arts, especially with some of the older cowboys. So they get people come on set, and if they could do flashy stuff, oh yeah, we'll pull you in. But I'd say a large, vast number of the stunt people were Wushu origins. A lot of people ended up doing choreography, were Wushu. And so it obviously had its influence. And I mean, I always say to people, the one advantage people who do either Wushu or more forms oriented is they make better film fighters, because typically a Wushu person or a, you know, kind of the freestyle XMA types that they evolved from the Wushu scene, they were really more about the choreography and the presentation. And when you get two people that are fighting in a film fight, it's more of a choreographed thing. And because film is visual, they want to see big, flashy movements. Maybe it's changed a little bit more now with the event of MMA. But in the old days, I said, if you had a bigger catalog of movement, typically the choreographers and the stunt people preferred it. Even in Hong Kong, once in a while, we get a kickboxer. And not to knock the kickboxers, I could tell you a lot of stories, but they don't have as big a catalog of movement. You need some boxing fundamentals, and basically a front kick, round kick, side kick. You don't see, say, jump spin hook kicks or jump spin wheel kicks or 540 tornadoes or that sort of thing. And the Wushu people, the tricking people, they have that. And for film, sometimes they don't care if it's realistic per se. It has to be visual. I think that's changed a lot in more recent times, especially with films like John Wick and some of what Donnie Yen does. Because the MMA, the jiu-jitsu, with John Wick, some of the judo, definitely became kind of the favored choreography. But I always say, if you've got a bigger catalog of movement, which is typically something the forms-oriented people, be it the freestyle XMA types or be it the Wushu people, it often puts you in a little better position. I always say, the more you got to offer, the better.
And it's interesting because now as we, you know, you talk to more people, I was recently, who was it? John Little, a couple of days ago. It was some other people I was talking to, and we were Demetrius from the Urban Action Showcase up in New York, which I don't know if you've ever been, it's one of the biggest action film festivals in the last 6 years or so. So everybody comes up. Have you heard of that before? You did hear of that before, correct?
I was actually someone was trying to see if I was able to go, and things didn't quite work out. But I have friends that go to that. Robert Samuels, I don't know if you know Robert Samuels. He's a fellow like me. He's got a background in Hong Kong. And I know, like me, he's kind of gone towards trying to do his own independent films. So I know Robert Samuels goes there. Ron Hall. Do you know Ron Hall?
Yeah, know all those guys.
Yeah, so the both those fellows were in Hong Kong at one point, different times, but they've both been in Hong Kong, and I met them while they were there. So I know they attend that, and that's kind of the big thing. It just hasn't been in the cards at this point.
So one of the things that, you know, we see to talk now is that there's a separation. They call them action stunt people and martial arts action people, because everybody's calling for more of a story, more of traditional, real martial arts doing martial arts. And some like yourself, like back in the day where, you know, you had a Steven Seagal, and Steven Seagal was traced to a traditional system. Well, you had a Jean-Claude Van Damme, and he was traced to a traditional system. Donnie Yen, hold him up. You know, so it seems like for the sake of keeping the martial arts alive, people are asking for, can we get real martial artists? It's better. I think it was Keith Steinberg. He said it was great to be able to take a martial artist and make them learn how to act than to take an actor for martial arts, for the B-level genre, for the pure martial arts film.
Yes.
It was better to have that than to have an actor trying to do martial arts. And it seems like that's what's coming back right now, where people seeing so much flipping. I know I'm tired of the flipping. I'm tired of all the tricking. It's kind of like when you got tired of Wushu. It was like, I remember when Wushu first started, you would run up the floor, do a technique, and run back down the floor, do a technique. Yeah. It was, people were laughing at it and told them, they're like, what are they doing all this running for, man? So they had to change the form. They're like, stop all the running. You remember those times?
Yeah, I remember. I'll say one thing about the film and the martial arts. You know, I agree 100% with the what you said, Keith Strandberg had said. And best examples, I would say, are Jackie Chan, Jet Li, Donnie Yen, okay, and Bruce Lee. I think Bruce Lee was a little more of a than those three other individuals. Still a martial artist, obviously. But in the case of Jackie Chan, Jet Li, Donnie Yen, you can't train an actor to have that kind of skill set in a short time. They did a brilliant job with someone like Keanu Reeves for The Matrix and the John Wick films. But generally, you can't make an actor move that way, right? So unless it's an actor like a Brad Pitt or, you know, George Clooney, where they are a highly bankable name that's going to put seats, or Tom Cruise as an example. I don't see why you would want to have an actor, especially if it's an action film. You want a martial artist first, then teach him back. You know, and I would say thing about Van Damme. I was never a huge fan of Van Damme, but I can see the attraction. You know, he's a good looking guy, moves really well, has an excellent physique. Nobody's hiring him because he's an actor. Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. But what he had to offer is much like a Schwarzenegger, right? Not a martial arts sense of Schwarzenegger, but the imposing menacing figure of him. Mm-hmm. And that sort of thing, you might as well take someone who has those qualities, be it martial arts or Schwarzenegger had to offer in terms of his physique. You can't get that out of an actor. So unless you're looking at a film that needs this big bankable name, take someone as an actor. And that, when I did my own film, it was the same rationale. I got all the people on my film, Beyond Redemption, are all some of the best martial artist stunt guys in the city of Vancouver. And our rationale was, look, I'm making a micro budget film, and nobody's tuning in to see this film for Shakespearean type acting, right? Mm-hmm. They're not in there to see huge, tremendous story development and character arc. They want to see action. So I understood that. And I said, I'm going to take these guys, and I hope to do kind of like a reverse engineer, like with Jet Li, Donnie Yen, Jackie Chan. Again, it's the physical assets that made them famous, not the acting, right? You know, someone like a Brad Pitt, obviously he comes along over the years, I mean, he's a good looking guy, but he comes along over the years because he's a good actor, right? And he's in some high production value movies, right? But when you're talking about the lower budget films, I say, you know what, don't get some actor and try to train. In fact, I had a couple people on my film say, well, why don't you get an actor? I'm like, because I can't get the martial arts out of them and the stunts out of them to the degree I could with the guys I had. I had Brian Ho and Don Liu, two best guys of Vancouver, hands down, for martial arts, stunts, fighting action, nobody better. Okay. And you're not going to get that training some actor, especially when my film was a micro budget. We made it for $45,000. So I knew, you know, just I got to get the stunt guy first, the martial artist first. And I would agree. I see a tendency now because I'm in that kind of realm where I'm trying to make a little higher budget. And the people that are sellable, that people want to see, yes, they're good as actors, but I think everyone's still looking at him as an action star that can do really good martial arts. And that could be people like Michael J. White, Scott Atkins, right? These are good examples of guys who are really well-trained, high-level martial artists, and they've got a fan base. They're maybe not doing the Tom Cruise-level Mission Impossible movies, but they're making movies that people want to see, and people want to see them because, yeah, they do the action really well. And you're not going to get that level that you see from, say, a Michael J. White or a Scott Atkins out of an average actor, you know? Yeah. Yeah. That's what I hope.
And that's awesome. I mean, that was one of the reasons why I even wanted to get on the show, because Al Gold, once again, I remember at one time, everybody talked about, oh, man, it was those B-level films. Fred, you know, what is it, Don the Dragon Wilson and all those guys. But you got to remember, you studied the industry, especially blockbusters back then. Those guys didn't make a comfortable living. They were consistently working on low-budget films, you know. And because we're now in that genre of doing out some independent films and TV shows and things like that, we understand that, yeah, there's a lane, especially in today's time, where you can get a good fan base and you can be consistent, because consistency is what equals wealth. It's not one big payday and, you know, you get a, you know, you roll the dice to 7-Eleven. It's having, because look, Jackie Chan, Jet Li, those guys started off at a small level, and it's through their consistency over the years that now they are who they are today. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No argument for me. The one thing I find is when I came back to Canada, from day one, I wanted to be more of an independent filmmaker. And I used to run into, well, why don't you just get an actor and double them? And I was like, not in a film like you see coming from Hong Kong with a Jet Li, Jackie Chan, Donnie Yen types. You're not going to be able to get an actor to move that way. You're not going to, unless you've actually done training, again, like Michael J. White or Scott Atkins, unless they got that level of training, in most cases, you're not going to get it, you know. Maybe in the case of a Matrix, where they're willing to put all that time and money to train Lawrence Fishburne and Keanu Reeves and Carrie Ann Moss. But generally, you're not going to get that, you know, especially if you're working at a low budget. So yeah, I actually, there was that time for the Don Wilson type movies, Gary Daniels, those type of guys. I can't remember the name of the company, but there was a company in LA that did a lot of those types of movies. Lauren Avedon is another example, right? Mm-hmm. And those guys were doing good. They were making films on a regular basis. Again, they weren't in a Mission Impossible type budget, but they had a fan base. You could walk into Blockbuster, see them on the shelves, you know, take them home on a Friday night, whatever, you know, enjoy yourself watching a 90-minute kind of, you know, martial art genre action film.
Right.
I think that they're starting to make a comeback, those sorts of films, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Jay White and Scott Atkins are proof of that.
Yeah. And I agree. We just recently did a movie during COVID called 1 out of 100 that deals with a couple of teenagers that are fighting through COVID to run a martial arts school and train in a MMA match People couldn't believe that we did it, and we did it practically on no budget, but it's done. It's completed. It's in post-production, but it's once again, during the time of COVID, it's a great story, like a Rocky story, but it's a martial arts. It's an incredible production. We get ready to go into another movie dealing with younger kids as well. Because I think one of the things you could probably attest to this, is that martial arts, especially during COVID, one thing that we do know, martial arts did inspire a lot of us and helped a lot of us overcome some obstacles in our lives that we were coming up. And
yeah,
the movies, and the magazines, and the books were our inspiration. And to me, as a martial artist, I got to continue to carry that torch and feed the next generation the philosophies and the principles of martial arts so they can be able to find, you know, especially COVID. I mean, we know that the one thing that can help add structure to a child's life and help them through the mental anguish that they're dealing with is martial arts. I mean, regardless of what, we know the power of martial arts. Am I correct, sir?
I would agree 100%. I won't go too deep, but when I was very young and I first started doing, you know, the traditional Kung Fu, a friend of mine from the elementary school that I was at decided to go with me. He didn't last too long. I think he dropped out after 6 months. Probably didn't like all the stance training that we used to do, like, you know, sit in the horse stance for long periods and what have you. But he dropped out. And then I later moved within the Vancouver area, and I didn't see him till much later in life. And I recently, because of Facebook, reconnected, and he was quite a dear friend when we were in elementary school. He had some life challenges, and a lot of it had to do with things like substance abuse. And I remember him saying to me at one point, he's like, wow, I probably should have done like you and stuck with the martial arts. I probably wouldn't have gone down the path. And he said, you know, it looks like you've had an interesting life. And it's true, I have. I consider myself blessed. But I realized it's because the martial arts kind of kept me grounded and kind of kept me away from those sort of challenges that unfortunately happened to this individual that I knew in elementary school. So, you're absolutely right. Martial arts is something that keeps kids grounded. And we don't teach more. My wife and I, she's from China. She's a Wushu person. One of the things we always felt was martial arts is a really positive thing for the kid, for young kids. It keeps them occupied, hopefully teaches them some positive values about remaining focused and disciplined and that sort of thing. And sometimes it's just a matter of it's keeping them off the streets. I think martial arts is really valuable that way. Any actual craft or physical culture type thing or sport, be it dance or music, martial arts, if it keeps a kid grounded and it teaches them positive elements of things, again, like I said, focus, self-discipline, those are really good things. And I think that's something that's good for young people in general.
Yeah, and that's the whole purpose of why we do what we do. I was one of those kids, and, you know, of course, martial arts had me still in that path to carry on. Mm-hmm. But the films and so forth, it's interesting because even in the movie, 1 out of 100, we couldn't really have actual judges judging the MMA fight. So what we have are virtual judges. And I was able to get two of my heroes. One is Jerry Trimbone. During that era, Jerry Trimbone was one of the, like, you remember Jerry Trimbone back in the day, man?
Yeah. He used to knock people out with kicks, which, you know, I remember seeing, it was like, wow, he's taking guys out with, like, kind of like Superfoot.
Yeah.
You know? Jerry.
And then he went into films and did a good job.
Definitely deserves the Golden Boy.
Yeah, that's it. That's him. And then he went into films and did a good job with the films as well. I mean, so it was an honor to get him on board and become a virtual judge. We have Alex Quatt, who's one of the Hilal Cho students from Taekwondo, and he does some stuff on a couple of the Law & Order TV shows. And then Danny Abbott, who's a popular guy, not so much in the films, but he's into the samurai sword, one of the only Americans to be certified with the Samurai. So we're working on Ron Van Cleef, people like that. But I think is a great thing. We would love to see how we can, you know, collaborate at some point, man. Maybe we can get you to come on to the Urban Action this year and be a virtual judge for the for our call to action. What do you think?
Absolutely, I'm totally game. And like I said, I'm well aware of Urban Action. Unfortunately, just didn't seem to be in the cards. But yeah, I'd be ecstatic to take part. In fact, one of the fellows that is from my particular like little group of the non-Asian guys, Vincent Lin, frequently goes to that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know about actually physically being there, but you know, I'm more than happy to do something virtual. Absolutely.
So I'll send you some information. Basically, we'll call the action is kind of like what we're talking. So how to break into the films? We just figured it out on our own, and we made it. Several years ago, I came up with this idea on, because back then you competed so you can get in the film. That's why you really went to tournaments. You see people who competed. They got on the front cover of the Karate magazine, and next thing you know, you're seeing Keith Vitale and Revenge of the Ninja or something like that, or Cynthia Rothrock, you know, being on the West Coast team. And now she's in Hong Kong doing film. So what we did, we'll call it action. We wanted to prepare kids and adults with the tools and advice on how to succeed in films to this day. So they come out maybe like a 30 to 60 second presentation, and then we give feedback on what they did and what they can do from your own experience to get into films. What do you think?
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, that's kind of American Idol-like, I guess. I think that's cool. They actually did, I don't know if you know, but Jackie Chan had a thing called My Disciple in China. It was a reality TV show. Before that, there was a thing called Kung Fu Star in China. In fact, we've had a couple Americans. My student, a fellow named Jack Tu, actually won the Jackie Chan thing along with six other people. But the Kung Fu Star, it was an American kid, Philip Sahagan, that took part in that. Forgive me, I can't remember his name. He's a Chinese American kid that also did very well in those things. And I always thought something like that in North America would be great. Because I'm forever getting contacted or, you know, people asking, hey, what can I do? And I think, honestly, in some ways it's better in the States because Canada's smaller, it's a different thing breaking in. But you're right. In the past, you get people like, you know, Cynthia Rothrock and Keith Vitale, Benny Urquidez, all these people. The martial art thing would be a stepping stone. And, yeah, it'd be great, you know. Urban Action Showcase, I think, would be a great platform to add something like that. So, yeah, I think it's cool. I think it's a great idea.
Okay. So, yeah, this is our fifth year. Last year we had Robert Parham, who's one of the he's probably one of the hardest working independent action film directors right now, doing films over and over and over. He was the director on the 100. He had Ivan Florentine, who directed me on WMAC Masters. We had Keith Steinberg, who said he's going to come back again this year. So, yeah, it was good. So, and then Robert Samuels, he has been a part of it. As a matter of fact, his first two independent films, Beast, that was my oldest son that was in his film. That first film, he had won the competition. And we didn't have Fred Williamson, we didn't have Ty Mack, we didn't have Cynthia Rothrock. We had James Liu. We had everybody, man.
Fred Williamson. Wow. That's a blast from the past.
Yeah, man. He's still working. He's still Billy Blank. I mean, so this whole, I'm just blessed to know that we have this whole core group of people. And I think it's a collective there to work together. We really work together. I know that, you know, and you correct me, I think from a, on an independent level, like our last, our recent film, you know, we practically had no budget when we finished the film. You know, and sometimes, as somebody was saying, they said, man, do you realize that Rocky was filmed off $1 million? You know, it's like, you know, if you believe it, you can, and if everybody's on the same wavelength, I think we can do some remarkable things. What do you think, sir?
Here's what I say. The Rocky, you're right. At that time, it was considered a bit of a risk putting the money into Stallone, and there's a lot of backstory to that. But there are people making movies, like you mentioned, your own particular project. My film is considered by Hollywood standards a micro budget. We made it for $45,000. The thing about independent film is, if you do it the right way, it will open doors. You're not going to, there are some cases of people who do it, but in most cases, you're not going to catapult into the Marvel universe all of a sudden. But if you do something well enough and it gets picked up by distributors, that opens the doors. And the minute distributors are willing to talk to you, because honestly, until you do something, they won't talk to you. In the case of our film, it's not a zero budget. You know, we did raise some money. It wasn't as much as we were hoping for. We just said, we got to do this. And people who wouldn't take my calls before now take my calls. Just before COVID, I signed a deal on one project. It's kind of a female. More recently, I signed another deal. It's kind of a, we'll say, a more serious toned Rush Hour type film. If I didn't do the first film, I would not be able to talk to the people I'm talking to currently and be looking at trying to raise a little better budget. We're not in the Marvel universe, but our budget's going to be between $1 and $2 million. Which for me is going to be like, yeah, I can do that because, you know, I got my schooling in film in Hong Kong where they have not even half the size of crew of a standard Hollywood film. They do a lot of what I call guerrilla shooting. You also understand how to be economic in your storytelling. And you also learn how to function without those big crews that a typical Hollywood film would have. But again, back to my point, you know, that first film, if you do it right, it opens doors. So whenever I talk to indie film guys, yeah, we actually were on the tail end of the lease for our school. The wife had just had our second child, and she would only teach on nights that I was actually filming. But if I was doing pre-production, she wasn't going to be at the school. So I was still running a full-time wushu school. The lease was up in a few months, and I had kind of was like, I thought I was going to die sometimes because I was literally going on a couple hours of sleep, you know, between running classes, production, rehearsals. And what I learned was now I can talk to, whereas prior to releasing that film, some of these guys would just literally ignore me at, say, film festivals or whatever. It's really important. Just do whatever it takes to get those first films made. And, you know, if you do something good, it's going to open doors.
I mean, once again, sir, I know the internet was a little crazy. Such a honor to meet you, to talk to you, for you to accept the opportunity to on the interview, but also to be part of the call section, because once again, my goal was always to do what you guys did, but I just wasn't, you know, I was a young age, so I didn't get a chance to do that. But as I did get a chance with WMAC Masters, who started opening, and now they're opening even more, and to be able to work with you and so many other people, I think we are ones that can give the next generation of superstars an opportunity to follow that path. And the doors don't have to close, because this independent path, you know, with social media and streaming it's not going anywhere. It's just going to open up broader and broader and broader. So I think collectively, I believe that violations bring people like for a particular reason. And some of the people that I've been reaching out to, they go, yeah, man, I'll be in the movie. Yeah, man. I'm like, what? They're like, yeah, man, I've been following you and seeing what you're doing, of course. Kids, let's do it. So that's what I feel about this, too. So I'm just on it, sir.
Yeah, wonderful. It's okay. I'll add one more thing that I just a little advice for indie film. The world's changing in a major way, in ways that I wouldn't have imagined when I was younger. And the world in terms of like things like the social media, some of the things you touched on, but YouTube and just the way that kids now, for example, get exposed to stuff that maybe you and I, when we were much younger, if it didn't get on mainstream television or show up in a theater, we might not become aware of it. Now I'll see, say, Hispanic kids doing reaction videos to K-pop. I would have never imagined something like that when I was a kid. And one of the things I'm learning, especially this last 10 years of my life, as I've been pushing back into film because I was out for a little bit, there's a big world out there. Places like China, India, parts of Africa, Eastern Europe, if you make the content the right way, they're going to gobble it up. But you have to make it in such a way that it really appreciates the people from those places. We actually have a couple projects that are Indo-Canadian themed, and our target audience, honestly, is India. The one deal that I just signed, if things work out, and I won't go into the name, but we'll have some Hong Kong Chinese cast into the Chinese market, or in the case of the other projects, appealing to India. So I always say to people, you know, if you're thinking about film, think about, it doesn't just have to be the stereotypical white lead. Like my film Beyond Redemption was almost entirely Chinese Canadian. In fact, the only significant role in there was actually a gentleman who's Egyptian that had dialogue. There were a couple of non-Asian guys in there that got beat up, but we sold all over Asia. Okay, in fact, we did our best sales throughout Southeast Asia, into the Middle East, India, Pakistan. And the one thing I think the reason we did that is we really were cognizant of trying to make something that wasn't stereotypical Hollywood. And if the other thing is, you're not going to be able to compete with stereotypical Hollywood because you don't have the names. You're not getting Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, Tarantino wasn't directing, right? So what I would say to independent filmmakers, really think about China, India, Africa, Eastern Europe. If you make some of this like stereotypical Hollywood, you're going to sell Western Europe, like the UK and stuff, right? But if you do it the right way, you could really potentially crack the markets of India, China, Africa, et cetera, Eastern Europe. Like I just really say to people, think about making your content appealing to those markets. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I love it. And when we do the call to action, I'm going to reach out to you tomorrow to get some photos and just a little brief bio. But when we do the call to action, I would really like us to, like, even just talk about, I call it the food stamp budget, you know, welfare budget, you know, practically nobody. So that's kind of what Isaac and all of us had a chance to talk about. And I think this will be some good advice to share and give to everyone. Yeah. I mean, when you see what Teachers is doing, he's doing everything. I mean, what is it, man? Virtual reality. I cannot believe what Ben is doing. This, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, it's everything like virtual VR. I mean, the virtual experience. I mean, so last year, I think he had well over 100,000 people in attendance. Scott Atkins, Michael Jai White. I mean, you just name it. He had everybody last year. So we were just talking this year. He's like, Ben, got to do it. I just got off the phone with him yesterday saying, okay, let me figure out. So to talk to you and you, boy, I'll mention to Bobby because I just got off the phone with Bobby Sanders the other night. And tell him that you're coming on board. That'll be awesome.
You're more than happy. All right. Sign it off. You have a great night.